Today, on The Journey.
Those whose life is patterned by grumbling will always find something wrong with God's plan. They will always conclude it is better to just to stay put or go back than to move forward.
It's widely known that a joyful heart is easily displaced by a complaining spirit, but often overlooked are the more damaging aspects of grumbling. So in today's program, Ron Moore shares two principles that will guard your spiritual satisfaction and maintain your heart's joy. Before that, I want you to know about Ron's uplifting devotional, Be Strong and Courageous. It reaffirms that God is in control and has great things for you to do. Be Strong and Courageous is available at ronmoore.org, and I'll have more about it later in the broadcast. Now, here's Ron with the message, It's a New Day, on The Journey.
We're going to begin a study in the Old Testament book of Joshua. It's a rich book. Joshua is a study of conquest. The people take the land. Joshua is a study of courage. Joshua is a study of faith because they have to walk into brand new territory they've never been before. And Joshua is a study of depending on God. Now, I know that some of you are going through some personal stuff, and it is challenging. And I'm confident that as we study this book together, you're going to learn some principles that will encourage you and that will comfort you and that will help you take the next step you need to take, whatever that next step is. And here's the promise that you will see over and over and over and over and over in Joshua. That wherever we go, God's already there. Wherever He leads us to go, He is walking right there with us. He promises never to leave us, never to forsake us. So let's get started. Take your Bibles and turn to Joshua chapter 1. After the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord said to Joshua, son of Nun, Moses' aide, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now then, you and all these people get ready to cross the Jordan River into the land I'm about to give to them, to the Israelites. I will give you every place where you set your foot as I promised Moses. Your territory will extend from the desert up to Lebanon and from the great river, the Euphrates, all the Hittite country to the great sea on the west. No one will be able to stand up against you all the days of your life. Read this last part with me. You ready? As I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will never leave you nor forsake you. In order to understand the book of Joshua, in order to understand what's going on, we need to first go back and set the book in its historical context. In order to do that, we want to go all the way back to the beginning of Genesis. So in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And He placed His crowning creation in a garden. And He told them with uninhibited communication and an uninhibited relationship with them. He told them, you are completely free. You can have anything in this garden. It's all yours. I've created it for you. There's just this one instruction. There's this tree in the middle of the garden. It has some fruit. And from that fruit, you cannot eat because the day you eat it, you will surely. Well, you know what happened. They ate the fruit. And God came to Adam and said, what in the world have you done? And Adam said, well, wait a minute. It was the wife you gave me. I didn't want her in the first place. You're the one who said it wasn't good for me to be alone. You created her. It was her fault. And then Eve said, well, don't look at me. It was the serpent. He tempted me. And of course, the snake didn't have a leg to stand on. Yeah, it hadn't gone over well any service so far. Now, just this poison at the beginning of a stream contaminates the entire stream. So the poison of sin at the beginning of the human stream of mankind has contaminated the entire stream of mankind. And so Paul says, all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. Now, it's important for us to know that we are not sinners because we sin. We sin because we're sinners from the very beginning. And sin entered the world here in Genesis 3, and it went south from there. Cain killed his brother Abel. in Genesis chapter 4. All the sinful actions begin to spread until Genesis 6 through 9, God sent a flood to wipe out the earth except for Noah and start all over. By Genesis 11, they're at it again, this time building a tower to God. Man always tries to do that, doesn't he? Work his way to God. We're going to build a tower that reaches the heavens. So God said, okay, that's enough of that. Genesis 11, God confused the language of the whole world. From there, the Lord scattered them over the face of the entire earth. And so in Genesis 10 and 11, we have the beginning of nations and languages around the world. And Genesis 10 and 11 is where that started. In Genesis 12, God unveils a plan for a nation of his own. Look at Genesis 12, verses 1 through 3. He says to Abram, leave your country, your people, and your father's household, and go to the land that I'll show you. I'll make you into a great nation, and I will bless you, and I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. And I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse. Listen to this. And all the peoples of the earth will be blessed through you. Think about that. All the peoples of the earth, everyone, will be blessed through you. Now, Abraham didn't know it at that time, but God is saying that you are going to be a nation and you're going to shine and you're going to demonstrate my work, but also I'm going to send my son through you, this nation, and all the peoples of the earth for eternity will be blessed through you as Jesus Christ comes through this nation. So the rest of Genesis, chapters 12 through 50, is a story of God building that nation. First through Abraham, then his son Isaac, and then his son Jacob, whose name God changed to Israel. And Israel's 12 sons became the 12 tribes of this nation that God used to demonstrate himself to the world and through which God sent his son. Now, if you're going to start a nation, you got to have a couple things, right? You have to have people, and you have to have what else? Got to have some land. And so in Genesis 15, God made a covenant with Abraham, the Abrahamic covenant. And in that agreement, God promised a portion of land, giving the location and the boundaries. And so when we come to the second book of the Bible, Exodus, it's time for the people to take the land. God has grown them into a great nation. He has tested them. He's made them strong. And now it's time for them to take the land. And so God raised up Moses, the deliverer, went in, spoke to Pharaoh. The 10 plagues came, and the people saw God at work. They're getting ready to take the land. It's a new day. And God has a land for them to take. After 400 years of slavery, they're delivered now, and they move into the promised land. They're getting ready to go. God's taking them on a journey to the promised land. But they run into some challenges. One day, they look up behind them, and they see some dust rising up and from the war horses and chariots of the Egyptians coming to kill them. And they look ahead of them, and they see the Red Sea, and they say, oh, great. What is God doing? Exodus chapter 14, they said to Moses, was it because there were no graves in Egypt that you brought us to the desert to die? Didn't we say to you, leave us alone, let us serve the Egyptians? It would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die here in the desert. So what'd God do? Parted the Red Sea, and the people went across on dry ground. 3 days later, they were thirsty. And so they grumbled against Moses, saying, what are we to drink? And God provided water. Getting a pattern here? And then they were hungry. So they grumbled again, Exodus 16. The Israelites said, if only we had died by the Lord's hand in Egypt. There we sat around pots of meat and ate all the food we wanted. But you have brought us out into the desert to starve this whole assembly. And so God sent manna and quail. And then God sent Moses and his aide, Joshua, up to the mountain to give this nation a law to govern them. The nation needs a law to be governed, right? And so God sent them up to get the law. While they were gone, the people said, those guys are never coming back. They've been gone so long. Let's just build a god of our own, the golden calf. And so God disciplined them for their disobedience. Then God said, okay, guys, let's go take the land. Time to go. So Moses sent 12 spies, kind of a reconnaissance mission, into the promised land to check it out so they could go take it. Two of the spies were Joshua and Caleb. And when the spies returned, Joshua and Caleb said, "Let's go take the land. This is the land God promised us. It's a great land. It's ours. Let's go take it." But 10 of them said, "Not so fast. It's a great land. It's flowing with milk and honey. Vegetation's strong. Produce is fantastic. But there are some people occupying the land. And they're big. There are giants in the land. And we kind of seem like grasshoppers in comparison to them." Look at Numbers chapter 14. How do you think the people responded? "That night, all the people of the community raised their voices and wept aloud. All the Israelites grumbled against Moses and Aaron, and the whole assembly said to them, 'If only we had died in Egypt or in this desert, why is the Lord bringing us to the land only to fall by the sword?' And God said, 'Enough. I have had it with you.'" Look at verse 26. "The Lord said to Moses and Aaron, 'How long will this wicked community grumble against me? I have heard the complaints of these grumbling Israelites. So tell them, as surely as you live, declares the Lord, I will do to you the very thing I heard you say. In this desert, your bodies will fall. Every one of you, 20 years old or more, who was counted in the census and who has grumbled against me, not one of you will enter the land I swore by uplifted hand to make your home, except Caleb and Joshua.'" We have time for a couple principles, and I want to draw the first one from this historical context. Grumblers can never grasp the power and the promises of God. Those who have a spirit of grumbling and arguing and complaining and a critical spirit, they will die in the spiritual desert and they'll miss the promises of God. There'll be a day when God says, "Enough. You can have all the things you've been grumbling about the whole time." Those whose life is patterned by grumbling will always find something wrong with God's plan. They will always find something lacking in God's promise. They will always conclude it is better to just to stay put or go back than to move forward. A few weeks ago, I had a really bad week. It was so irritating to me because I saw God's hand at work in some tremendous ways, but I was still irritated. I wasn't preaching that weekend, and so Lori and I came to the 9 o'clock service, and I was already irritated, and then we were running a little late. It added to my frustration. I had a meeting after church that Sunday, and so we came in two cars, and I followed Lori, and there was a place I wanted to park, and she didn't park at that place. I didn't tell her where I wanted to park, but she should have known. We've been married for 30 years. You'd think she would know. And so walking into church, I let her know that she didn't park where I wanted her to park, and I was a little irritated about that. And she rolled her eyes at me, which even irritated me more. When I walked in the door back there, I grabbed a sermon notes and I sat down ready to take some notes. And I learned that nothing was happening right in the service from beginning to the end. Service just stunk. So I just started writing down things that we needed to work on and things we needed to change and why was this happening and we should have done this better. I have a whole front and back. So the service ended, and I went home, and Lori was already there, and I said, "What'd you think about that service today?" And she said, "Man, it was great. Loved it." And I rolled my eyes at her. "Where did you go to church this morning? Because where I was, it wasn't that good." And standing there in the kitchen, I realized that it wasn't the service that stunk. I'm not talking about the grumbling just at a church service. I'm talking about grumbling as a way of life. And you know if that's your issue. Nothing right. Always wrong. Always complaining. Always a critical spirit. Never able to move forward. Because when you look at the future, there's just as many complaints there as there are in your present and were in your past. And God finally will say, if you don't deal with it, enough. Grumblers can never grasp the power of God. Turn over to the New Testament, Philippians chapter 2. Paul says this in verse 14. Do everything without complaining or arguing. And here's why, verse 15, so that you may become blameless and pure, children of God, without fault, in a crooked and depraved generation, in which you shine like stars in the universe, as you hold out the word of life, in order that I may boast on the day of Christ that I did not run or labor for nothing. Paul says, man, don't spend time arguing and grumbling. You're those who need to hold out the message of Jesus Christ. It's a message of light. It's a message of hope. It's a message of healing. If you're going to grumble all the time, you cannot grumble and at the same time hold that message out. You cannot walk in faith. You cannot walk into the future. So do everything without grumbling and complaining as you hold out the message of Christ. For the next 40 years, these Israelites wandered in the desert, grumbling and in disobedience until every one of them died. 20 years or older, all of them died. Even Moses. Moses, one time, they were grumbling again. They wanted water. And God said, here's what I want you to do, Moses. I want you to speak to a rock, a certain rock, and then water will come out. In your faithful speaking to that rock, the people will know that I provided the water. But Moses was so angry with the people. The grumbling had impacted him as well. He was so angry that he took his staff. Remember the story? And he hit the rock as hard as he could two times, and water came out. But God said, well, Moses, that's not what I told you to do. You're going to die in the desert as well. You're not going to see the promised land. I need obedient people walking with me. Look at verse 2. Everyone, 20 years older, in the desert, they're gone. It's a new day. And so the first thing that God tells Joshua, I find this fascinating, in verse 2, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now, God's not exactly breaking the news to Joshua. They have been mourning the death of Moses for 30 days. Joshua is well aware that Moses is dead, but with those five words, God is making a significant statement. Let's think about what God is saying. To this point in Joshua's life, he has been Moses' aide. All he has known about God, he learned through Moses. All he knows about the spiritual life, he learned through Moses. For 40 years, he has been the aide of Moses. He even went up to Mount Sinai with Moses. Moses was larger than life. Deuteronomy says there was never a prophet like him before or after. The miracles and the power that he showed never were shown again. And Joshua was right there with him the whole time. But God said, you know what? Joshua, it's a new day. I know you had the most fulfilling, the most satisfying, the most enriching experiences of your life has been there with Moses. But Joshua, Moses is dead. It's a new day. Here's my second principle. You cannot live in the past. You must move forward. Living in the past is an insidious disease that eats away at the present and robs you of your future. And many people spend a lot of their time living in the past, longing for things that have already happened. When you long for things in the past, you are longing for things that can never happen again. It's over. Moses is dead. You have to move forward. Maybe your past, like Joshua, was great. It was enriching, fulfilling, satisfying. Tremendous accomplishments back there. That's fantastic. Thank God for that. But Moses is dead. That's over. As believers, we want to always carry our spiritual birthright, but we need to burn our resumes. Thank God for what he did, but that happened in the past. You cannot carry accomplishments with you. Some of you, your past wasn't so great. And you are like stuck in the regret and failure of the past, which is akin to being stuck in reverse. And you're convinced that God can't use you, that God can't do anything for you. You're stuck back there because of something that happened in your past. I want to tell you today, Moses is dead. It's over. You can't change what happened yesterday. You wish you could, but you can't. So you need to seek God's forgiveness. You need to seek the forgiveness of others and move on. Just like Paul. In Philippians chapter 3, Paul says, one thing I do, forgetting what is behind and straining toward what is ahead. He said, I press on toward the goal to win the prize for which God has called me heavenward in Christ Jesus. I press on. You say, that's fine for you. Ron's standing up there saying that, but you don't understand my past. I'm sitting here today with a lot of stuff. I got a lot of hurt. I got a lot of pain. Yeah, it's easy for you to say, but I'm living with it. Well, I know that. But I just want to make this other point. The children of Israel have been living in slavery for 400 years. Slavery. Just think about what goes on with that. And God did not give them a break when they grumbled. When they moved out of Egypt, they were moving into a new day. And God said, the past is over. You left Egypt behind. But you see what happens when you don't get over your past? You always want to go back. It's always better there. But God says, man, you got to move on. So we can get you some help to deal with your past. But don't get stuck there. It's a new day. Got to move forward.
And please stay with us. Ron returns in a few moments with a look at our next time together. In a day of doubts and fears, of challenges and opportunities, you need the assistance of God's power and guidance. The children of Israel faced just such days as they entered the Promised Land. How they won the day with God's direction and strength is told in the book of Joshua. Now, in his encouraging devotional, Be Strong and Courageous, Ron Moore surveys that heroic story. In its pages, Ron shares thought-provoking insights that will equip you to spiritually imitate Israel's ultimate victories. Get your free copy of Be Strong and Courageous with a visit to ronmoore.org. Again, that web address, ronmoore.org, or call toll-free 866-777-1202. That's 866-777-1202. Now, let's rejoin Ron for a preview of our next broadcast.
I believe that deep fears embed themselves in the heart of every leader. Every leader deals with private doubts. And someone has well said, thinking about the weight of leadership and the vulnerability of leaders, men hang heavy weights on thin wires. As we continue through the book of Joshua, we find Joshua in a new position of leadership. He's not a young man. He's probably in his 60s. And I believe as we look at the text today, there are answers to four questions that Joshua is asking. I believe these are the questions that every leader asks. One, do I have what it takes? Two, what if I fail? Three, will others go with me? because I can't do this alone. And the last one, and this is an important one, will the battles be worth it?
We hope you can join us for that message next time. And remember that a free copy of Ron Moore's inspiring devotional, Be Strong and Courageous, is waiting for you in print or as a digital download at ronmoore.org. Or call toll-free 866-777-1202. That's 866-777-1202. Have you missed one of Ron's messages or series? Well, you'll find them when you click the broadcast button at ronmoore.org. And if the journey has brightened your day and deepened your walk with Christ, won't you tell your friends and family about our program? Also, please keep in mind, the journey relies on your generous gifts to pay for the airtime that makes this broadcast possible. Your gift today will be deeply appreciated. Thanks for listening, and we invite you to join Ron next time as we walk together on the journey.